That was just a snippet from Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 5, played in honor of my guest in the studio, Patrick Krieger. In fact, that was a clip of Patrick Krieger playing the piano as guest soloist with the Barton College Wilson Symphony. And right now, you're scratching your heads, wondering why my promo promised a discussion with an organist. Well, he manages a career on both instruments, and we're here to talk about that today. Welcome, Patrick.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you're in town for a recital tomorrow night at the Church of the Nativity, part of their Friends of Music series that starts at 7 p.m., and you'll be playing the organ there. And as I read your bio, I noticed that you started your music studies at the tender age of 3, and I assume that was on the piano?
That's correct. At age 3, I could not reach the pedals on the organ, so I started with the piano.
Okay, and then you added the organ studies when you were about 12?
About 12, I turned to the organ or added the organ to my studies.
Okay, was that, what precipitated that? A suggestion from a teacher or an experience hearing a fine organist? What turned you on to what they call the king of instruments?
Well, the experience of hearing a fine organist, and that being my grandmother, who was a church organist for over 70 years. And so I was always amazed at the sound that could come out of an instrument like that. And so even when I was young, at 3, I was placed on an organ bench, but I wasn't, you know, of course, formally trained, but it always stuck with me, that memory, and so we often would do duets later on, and so it was a kind of a family thing.
Oh, I'll bet she was so proud of you.
Oh, she was great.
Oh, that's just a wonderful story. Well, around this time, I guess, or sometime soon after that, your family moved from Florida to North Carolina.
Yes.
And I'll bet for you, the young music student, finding a good teacher was right up there with finding the right house to buy or the best school district, right?
Right. When I left Florida, I was very fortunate to have had two wonderful teachers, Dr. Gerson Yesen for piano, who was at the University of North Florida, mm-hmm. and then Jim Wood, who was the organist at a local Episcopal church down there. And Jim Wood gave me the perfect introduction to the organ. And I worked with him, I think, for just about over a year. Mm-hmm. And so I had started the organ, the process, the studies were in motion. And then moving to North Carolina, that, of course, finding the right teacher was, you know, right at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. So we really were fortunate through East Carolina University to find two of the college professors there, Dr. Henry Dosky for piano and Colin Andrews for organ. And they worked side by side with me, coaching on piano, one coaching on organ. And I felt like both instruments kind of played into each other. What I learned on the piano, technique-wise, could be applied to the organ and vice versa. So.
Well, they must have been very successful coaching you because you made your Carnegie Hall debut at the age of 17. And this was on the piano?
That was on the piano, yes.
Okay. Would it be safe to say that you were a prodigy at a young age? Do you consider yourself a child prodigy?
I never like calling myself a prodigy. A lot of people have called me a prodigy, but I like to just credit a lot of the teaching that I've had. I've been blessed with a lot of wonderful teachers around, you know, the U.S. and really around the world who have guided me from a tender young age of 3 mm-hmm. and all the way up to now. And without, you know, the proper guidance, I would not be where I am now. So, of course, you have to have the talent. You do have to have the motivation. You have to do the hard work.
I was going to say there's a lot of hard work in there somewhere.
Yes, that's,
from you. And,
yeah,
and obviously a little from your teachers.
Right.
Well, let's take a little time to listen to some music that will be on your recital tomorrow night, and then we'll get back to your dual keyboard career. But I have here that we'll listen to Bach's Prelude and Fugue in E-flat major, and we'll listen to just the fugue. But I think there could be no better person to discuss Bach than an organist. He's like your patron saint, right?
Oh, yes. I think that's for any organist, you know, that's kind of like the go-to composer. And this piece in particular, it's the Prelude and Fugue in E-flat, which is nicknamed the Saint Anne. The reason it's named the Saint Anne is because there's a hymn tune called Saint Anne, Our God, Our Help in Ages Past, that Bach takes and derives this whole piece from. Right. And so throughout, especially the fugue, you can hear that subject coming back multiple times as it builds up to a wonderful climax. And so with Bach, I find so much, you know, gratification from playing his works because he wrote so well for the instrument. It fits the hand well, it fits the feet well, and it's just glorious music to get to play and present to others. And specifically with the Prelude and Fugue, the Fugue in particular, I view fugues as like a puzzle. You're given subjects and they come in at different areas throughout the piece, and you have to, it's your job as the organist to bring it out and shape the piece as a whole. And so it's kind of like a game in my mind.
Well, and you can enjoy this music when you're at the recital just in a visceral sense, just let it wash over you.
That's
without
exactly
knowing
right.
anything about it. Or I even read this fugue is representative of the Holy Trinity. And I don't know if this is speculation by scholars, but a lot of things in it refer to the number three, like there are three flats in the key signature. There are three, the fugue is threefold, or the interval of a third is prominent throughout all
right.
of this.
Right. You're saying, you know, exactly what a lot of people have discussed. Not just with this piece, but Bach in general, symbolism is very important. And with the Prelude and Fugue, the St. Anne, you do have the three flats in the key signature. You have a triple fugue. And you also, looking at if you zoom out a little bit, you have the Prelude and Fugue, which bookend the Klavier Übung 3, which is his third organ book. And in between these this Prelude and Fugue, you have 21 chorale preludes, which you can divide by three, you get seven, and seven is considered the number of perfection in the Christian tradition.
It
just goes on and on.
Well, the fact that he's able to do all of this, weave all of this information in, or all of this symbolism in, and still make such great music
right.
is astounding to
right.
me. Like I say, you wouldn't need to know anything about it to just sit and enjoy.
Right.
Well, let's listen to the Fugue in E-flat major of Johann Sebastian Bach, and you will hear that St. Anne hymn tune right at the start of this. Today, right here and now, we're listening to Doug Marshall perform this.
Thank you.
From Bach's Prelude and Fugue in E-flat major, we heard Doug Marshall perform the fugue portion. And tomorrow night at 7, you can hear my guest, Patrick Krieger, perform this piece in its entirety at the Church of the Nativity at 7 p.m. So, Patrick, we were talking about the fact that you began your organ studies at the age of 12. You kept studying the piano, and you were granted a full scholarship to the Curtis Institute in Philadelphia. This is such a selective music school. Did you enter as a pianist, an organist, or both?
I entered officially as an organist, and one of the deal is not the right word, but one of the deciding factors that I discussed with my organ professor there, Alan Morrison, was I will come for sure, but I want to make sure that I get an excellent piano teacher. Could you recommend someone? Mm-hmm. And he said right away, he said, I've got the perfect person. And he said, Susan Starr. And so I started working with her. And alongside with Alan, quickly at Curtis, I found that I had a lot of learning to do. And so I went back to, you know, basically the drawing board with my technique and my approach to both instruments. And Susan also taught Alan when he was a Curtis student. And so he knew what I was working on with her. And just like I had in high school with my piano and organ teachers in Greenville, that tradition kind of continued. And so it was really a wonderful setup getting to work not only on both instruments, but to work with teachers who knew each other. And I feel like what they were listening for, while every musician, just like an artist, is different, there were some similarities, and that helped as I went through the different pieces I was working on.
I'll bet. Well, was studying at Curtis a joy, or was it very stressful? What was atmosphere that was there like?
I look back with such fondness at Curtis, and was it heavenly? Absolutely. Was it stressful? Of course. You know, like you said, it was a very selective school, and I don't know what the stats are right now, but I think a couple years ago it was 3 or 4%, if that, acceptance rate. And I almost did not apply because you hear of the statistics, and I thought, well, what's the point? And I credit my parents. They put their foot down and they said, you will apply and you never know. Mm-hmm. And here we are. You never know. And so when I auditioned, it was the first time I had met my professor at Curtis. And following the audition, we had had an extensive interview. So he wanted to get to know me. What was I about? Right. That was the end of it. I mean, the rest was history, and I was granted admission. And so I spent 5 years at Curtis. And while there, I, of course, didn't just focus on organ. I focused a lot on chamber music, accompanying, and of course, you know, with solo piano, working with Susan Starr. It kept me very busy, and so the performing opportunities were superb. I mean, there were certain weeks after I got through the first 2 years of coursework, I had more time to take on more performances, and so there were some weeks where I was performing 3 to 4 times per week. So it was, Curtis, one of their mottos is you learn by doing. And so they really encourage students to go out on stage, and that's the best, you know, teaching tool as a burgeoning performing artist.
Well, that's funny that you mentioned that, because just a couple of weeks ago we had one of the members of the Canadian Brass in here talking with us, and I was asking about how they get together to rehearse and, you know, before their performances, and he said, you know, we perform so much that we really perform more than we rehearse, and even a lot of new things we just take right out on stage. He said, because you learn so much quicker on stage.
Yes.
So, and it surprises me to hear that, but I know that nothing focuses the mind like impending performance, so you work even harder to get ready for
those. Exactly right.
Yeah. So after Curtis, you went on to study at Yale, getting your master's degree there, and I imagine that's where you met our friend Christian Crocker, an organist here in Huntsville, that's brought you to town to play.
Yes. Yeah, so following Curtis, I went directly to Yale and studied at the School of Music and the Institute of Sacred Music. I was a student of Martin Jean. And like you said, I also met Christian there. We were in different departments. Christian was choral conducting and I was organ. But I spent 2 years there. And it's wonderful. I mean, Yale, there are so many wonderful aspects of Curtis. There's so many wonderful aspects of Yale. They are two completely different animals.
Really?
And whereas Curtis focused a lot on performing, Yale focus, their focus was more academics. And I always appreciated, a rigorous academic challenge. My high school in North Carolina, it provided not only rigorous academics, but there is a very strong performing arts program there. And so having the blend of those two is kind of like ideal to me. And so when I got to Yale, the academics were terrific. You get to work with some of the leading scholars in music, mm-hmm. there. And so getting that, and then also getting to work with all of the instrumental resources there, for performing. They have an organ in Marquand Chapel built by Taylor and Booty, organ builders, that's modeled after North German instruments. So you can play Bach or Buxtehude and hear and see what it felt like. And
Back in Bach's time.
Yeah. And then they have another, one of my favorite instruments is the one in the organ in Woolsey Hall, one of the largest pipe organs in the U.S. and truly a symphonic instrument. It has all the bells and whistles you could ever want. So having those resources, having the library, I mean, what the resources they had under that roof is second to none. And so it's different from Curtis because there was more focus on academics. I didn't find myself performing as much there, but at the same time, I left with just a different perspective on approaching music.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you obviously have made so many connections, all of you that went to school there, because we've met several of Christian Crocker's Yale colleagues over the past few years that he's brought to town to perform at Nativity. Some of them even work here as choir masters or whatever, and I'm just blown away by the talent that comes out of there. It was not previously on my radar before I met all of you guys from Yale.
Yale was one. I mean, my 2 years there, the folks that were in the organ department were fantastic and continue to be fantastic from what I hear. And I mean, Yale has high standards, and people who are admitted, they are inquisitive, they are talented, they are motivated. You know, they really want to make a mark in the music world, and so when you put them all in the same room, it's
magic happens.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is. Well, let's listen to a little more music, a sample of what folks will get to hear tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at the Church of the Nativity. Here's just a short excerpt from Joseph Jungin's Sonata Eroica. And I picked this piece to play here today because it begins with a few minutes of unison passages between both hands and the organist's feet on the pedals. Both hands and both feet are playing the same thing. And these are not half-note passages. This requires some really fast moving around down there. So let's listen, and then we'll talk about this.
Thank you.
And that's just a little sample of Joseph Schongen's Sonata Eroica, which will be on the program tomorrow night at 7 at the Church of the Nativity, part of their Friends of Music series. Patrick Krieger, is this piece difficult to play?
Of course.
Well, it looks like it. Well, it doesn't sound that hard, but when I watch the video on YouTube of the hands and feet here, I can't decide. Is it harder to play really fast like that when you're in unison with your hands or when your feet and your hands are doing entirely opposite things?
I think there are difficulties on both ways of thinking about that. This piece is technically challenging for the hands, the feet, and also it's a very colorful work. So I really enjoy presenting this piece in concert because it shows off on a slightly larger instrument, such as the one at Church of the Nativity. It shows off many of the different colors and sounds that it's capable of making. So to do that on the organ, you have to be able to press a lot of buttons very quickly. And so that is also an added challenge when playing this piece because you're not only playing notes, you're pressing a lot of buttons, pulling stops manually, and all while keeping hands and feet together. So it does have its challenges.
Well, I want to talk with you for a few minutes about individual organs. Folks listening even today can hear the difference in sound between the three pieces that we've already played here. There's so much personality difference in different instruments, mm-hmm. different organs, and even ones made by the same maker. Is that because of the surrounding acoustics?
Well, the acoustics certainly play into it, and certain organs... I mentioned earlier about Marquand Chapel at Yale has the North German organ. Now, you're not going to want to play certain music on that due to its temperament. And also, it has a shorter keyboard range, and so it's physically not capable of playing more modern literature. But you mentioned a very important aspect of organ building, and that is the acoustics. And acoustics, many people say, or the acoustic, is the most important stop on the organ. And so if you have a huge organ in a very small room with carpet everywhere, it's going to be a very dead sound. It's not going to necessarily be thrilling. But if you open up the space and you don't have so much padding around, it can be, you know, it has a nice reverberant space to it. It's going to sound even more thrilling. And so, yes, with the acoustics, that plays into the personality of an organ. It also depends on the organ's voicing. So when a new organ is installed, they will, you know, it's one thing to just install the pipes, it's another thing to tune it, but then to voice the pipes, how loud does one note sound against a stop? And they make adjustments. The organ builders come in and make adjustments to help the organ blend and also have some personality. And so between the acoustics and the voicing, you really get, the DNA for the organ.
Well, this whole process ranks right up there with rocket science for me. I mean, most things like you just blow into a trumpet or you just open your mouth and sing, but this is a whole host of people working to make this come to life. Well, I have a question. Do you have a favorite instrument that you've played in the past, one that you loved the minute you sat down and put your hands on the keyboard?
I think to narrow it down to one, I think, is too hard, but I can give you three.
Okay.
So I mentioned earlier Woolsey Hall at Yale. Mm-hmm. Truly a symphonic instrument, and you can play, I mean, you can really play anything on that organ, and to be able to play orchestral transcriptions, for my graduation recital there, I did a transcription of Dvorak's Carnival Overture.
Wonderful.
So
yeah.
Much fun, and it really worked in that room. It has a terrific acoustic, and it has any sound you could ever want. In addition, St. John the Divine in New York City, fantastic acoustic. I mean, glorious. It just melts. The sound melts.
And goes on and on and
does,
on and on
yes.
and on.
And then finally, of course, the Wanamaker organ, which is now in Macy's in Philadelphia. When I was at Curtis, I had the good fortune of getting to play that a couple times.
And, oh, my gosh. The great Wanamaker organ. That would be incredible. Well, not just to play, but even to those listening. And we've been listening to these clips of organ music on this show today, but I think all they can do is remind us of live performances that we've heard in particular spaces, because there's just no way to describe sitting in a cathedral or a concert hall and hearing and feeling the music coming out of the organ pipes, right?
Exactly.
Oh, well, currently you're living in New York City, pursuing your doctorate with Paul Jacobs at Juilliard.
Correct.
So completely different atmosphere there?
It's been, again, you know, a shifting gears. So from Curtis, where, you know, there was a lot of performing, and then Yale, which was focused more on academics, the Juilliard doctorate is really the blend that I've been looking for.
A culmination.
Yes. And at Curtis, I was one of four in the department. I've been in departments where there was a family feel. And so there was, I think, there were four students at Curtis in the organ department. And then when I got to Yale, I believe there were 10. And so when I was looking for doctoral programs, trying to find that school that could offer that family feel, that was one of the top priorities as I was looking. And the Juilliard doctorate is very, of course, very selective. But once I got there and I got to know my colleagues, I knew I made the right decision. It's rigorous academics. I mean, they really make you earn it. And so not just academically, but you have to do a lot of performing, lecture recital, and then, of course, a dissertation, which I happened to just finish mere days ago.
So congratulations. Boy, I bet you're relieved.
Yeah, that was my goal. Before I come to Alabama, I want to have this done. So
I think everybody that travels to Alabama should do a dissertation
finish that one
at Juilliard before they come.
Yeah, but overall, my time there has been fantastic. This is my fifth and final year as a student there, and it's been a really good experience.
Well, you're probably a pretty busy person serving as church organist and music director in addition to your studies and a healthy concert career. Do you have time for interest outside of music? Do you have anything else that you like to do?
I love to cook. My wife and I, we both love to cook. She's a pediatric nurse practitioner, and she's finishing up her doctorate at Columbia right now. And so, you know, being both of us in the city, that's great, but we both are finishing heavy-duty coursework and documents right now. And so free time is non-existent, but
eating out,
delivery, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. But cooking for both of us and traveling, we like to do that as time permits. So, yeah.
Right. Well, Patrick Krieger, it has been a delight to get to talk to you today. And I know folks will be eager to come out and hear and see you play tomorrow night at the Church of the Nativity downtown. That's 7 p.m. And we discussed while the music was playing in here that they're going to pull the organ console out and turn it a bit. So audience members will be able to see your hands on the console, your feet on the pedals. They'll be able to see
everything.
They'll
get a good view.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And, of course, the sound is just magnificent. And I'd like to point out that these Friends of Music concerts at Nativity are open to the public. That means they're free of charge. You just walk up and come in, easy access, parking close by. If you need additional information, you can call the Church of the Nativity at 256-533-2455, and somebody there will answer your questions. And this event also shows up on the WLRH.org community calendar. It has the details of the concert, the phone number I just mentioned, and the website that you can visit. I know it will be a great recital, and I want to thank you for coming by today to talk to us here at WLRH, Patrick.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we'll go out with one more piece of music that but before we do that, I want to ask, if you had to choose piano or organ, got a favorite? Is this like choosing between your children?
Yeah, I can't do that.
Okay. So love them both equally. Okay. Well, let's listen to a portion of another work on the program tomorrow night. This is the Allegro Movement from José Lidón's Four Pieces for a Mass. And this is such joyful music. On this recording, we'll hear Brink Bush playing the organ at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. Music of José Lidón.